are you doing the things that you want to do or what others want you to do? Simple as that. Like everything that you do, question it. You know, was this told to me? Am I doing this to impress someone? Am I doing this to look good? Am I doing this to, you know, status signal? Or is it something that genuinely makes me happy? You know, am I really doing this for me?
Welcome to a new episode of My Generation with Ines, the podcast that challenges different perspectives on different topics and brings one that my generation would love to hear.
So hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of My Generation with Ines. This time, I'm very excited to have with me an author, Neil Atim. He's the author of Get Your Shit Together, The Life Guide for Young Adults. With almost a decade in the marketing space, Neil consults authors, thought leaders, and companies globally, and he's also a world traveler, athlete, polymath, and advocate for self-education. Neil, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Very happy to have you. I met Neil's actually, yeah, the power of networking. Like one of my co-workers before, I saw her LinkedIn post and she was talking about how last year in the pandemic, I think you sat down, the three of you, and you were talking about what you want to do for next year. And she was sharing how Neil talked about that he wanted to write a book. And here it is. He wrote the book a year later and she was promoting that. And I loved like what she was sharing. And I said, let me get in touch with him. And so we did. And here we are recording. So Neil, maybe we can go back to that moment Larissa was talking about.
Yeah, Larissa and Monique, right? So basically, it was like a year before I released the book. I think I published the book in September. I should know this date, but I don't. But I think it was the 20th of September, if I'm not mistaken. So that's this year. But last year, I actually resigned from my job. So I left my job to write this book, you know, like after many years of being in the corporate world. I've been in the corporate world for like since I was 19, you know, so a little more than 8 years. And just looking for the next thing, you know, during the pandemic, there's like this global everyone resigning and all of that, you know, and I think I was just part of that somehow in the beginning stages, you know, because you're at home, working from home, all the lockdowns, everything, and you're doing your job, and then you start questioning yourself, like, okay, is this really it? Is this really all? You know, am I at my full potential? And I've been wanting to do this for like a number of years, but it's just one of those things where you're like, one day I'll write a book, you know. And then it just occurred to me, like, why not now, you know? And it probably wasn't the best time, as in there's a global pandemic, people are losing their jobs. And I have that job security. I'm actually, I was staying in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and I'm actually from the Caribbean. So even leaving my job at that moment, like the borders to my country was closed off. So I didn't have a solid plan as to where I'd go next and all this. I didn't even think it through fully in terms of like planning and all that, but I just decided then and there to just quit my job. And I told my boss, listen, I'm going to quit. I'm going to write this book. And that's it. And I just made up my mind in that moment, you know. So it was somewhat spontaneous, but premeditated for many years, you know. So I guess during the pandemic and everything, it was just like that tipping point where I just went over the edge and decided, like, why not now? You know, just fuck it. And let me just do this now.
Mm-hmm. And did you have the... Because like for me, when I think about if I would write a book, I always have that thought in a later stage of life when I have enough wisdom and, you know, I can legit, you know, benefit people. So did you have like this journey of like, what did I do in order to tell someone else, even, and especially like you're having like a life guide for young adults. So how was the thought process behind doing that?
So, I mean, it's a little bit of imposter syndrome, or maybe a lot of imposter syndrome, right? Because like, here I am, this 27-year-old that is writing a book for young adults. And like, yeah, obviously I start questioning myself, like, who am I to do this? I should probably do this later on. But then now I'm thinking like, if I can go back, so the entire thought process behind this book is if I can go back 10 years, to my younger self and give some advice, like what would that advice be? And that's basically what I put into this book, you know. And I think it would add value to anyone who reads it. Like, because for me personally, like, I've struggled a lot with every area of my life, and I had to overcome a lot of things. So all this basically is like my lessons, and I made it in such a way that it's pragmatic, it's practical, it's something you can apply immediately to anything, you know. So it, I mean, the main argument that I had to overcome and actually take action to put this out was like, am I doing that person who I want to help a favor by not writing the book or by writing the book? So it's basically, you know, black and white type of philosophy towards it, you know. So if I don't do it, would I make any impact? And if I do it, would I make any impact? So, you know, the greater chance of me having an impact and helping someone would be by doing it, you know. And I mean, here it is. I actually published a book, and it's a first edition. Like, as I go on in life, gain more experience, learn more stuff, I can actually go forth and improve it, you know, create like a second edition, third edition, whatever. But at least something is out, and I know that there is a chance that it will help someone compared to me not writing the book and having that internal voice keeping me back and actually not putting anything out there, you know?
Yeah, I will go back to the book a bit later, but because you say that, I also read, like, if I would go back to my younger self, this is the kind of book that I would write. So I'm curious to know, how is your younger self? Like, if you can tell us a bit of like the beginnings of your journey, for people also that will listen, they would say, okay, who he was in his younger self, so I can relate to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult start at a specific place, but let me just, you know, make it brief. Basically, I grew up in the Caribbean. I grew up with my grandparents because my parents, when I was like really young, my father died when I was 11, but I didn't had much of a relationship with him. He left the country. So growing up, you know, it was like a militant type of environment growing up with your grandparents, you know, a lot of discipline. You know, they didn't have much, but They gave me enough to actually instill proper values in me. Basically, I had to be independent from a young age, do a lot for myself. And from the time I turned 18, like, I never took like $1 from anyone, you know? So I was like working since I was a teenager, since I was a kid, actually, just trying to make money, you know, do stuff, get stuff for myself, put myself through school, through university, getting a degree. Like, initially I studied computer science. I started in the corporate world when I was 19. And even before that, like, I couldn't get a job, you know? So this is also in the book, you know, I wrote about this. Like, one of the early stages was like, I already had like an associate's degree in computer science, and I couldn't get a job at all, because the thing about being in the Caribbean as well is that there's so little job opportunities that you need to find stuff on your own, you know? And I couldn't find a job. So I actually took this job like picking up trash from the street at like 4 a.m. to actually make money. So then I can do that in the morning, make time to go to school, and then night classes, all these things, you know. And then eventually I got to a point where I started a business by designing logos, building websites, all these things, turned into an agency. And somehow I landed a job at the same time, you know, and then things started taking off from there. Then started traveling, you know. And then that's where I would say my real education began. Yeah. And I started seeing different perspectives, you know, compared to what I know, what I'm accustomed being around. Because when you grow up on a small island, like, you know, the mindset is limited, like the environment that you're exposed to is limited. The opportunities that you see around you are limited. And obviously that's going to limit how you think, you know, how you perceive the world. And then, you know, from there, I just decided, you know, I'm going to try getting a job abroad, doing something different, you know, exploring. So I changed careers, went from computer science into marketing, got a job in Malaysia, just left everything. I sold everything that I owned and just left my job after 5 years, moved to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and lived there, worked there for like almost 3 years. That's when I decided to quit last year and just write the book. So that's basically a TLDR of my journey there.
So you changed career and you changed countries and you started working early.
Very early, yeah. I mean, in terms of career, I started as a teenager with my full-on career, but before that, you know, it was like it was all about hustle, you know, like do anything to make money kind of thing, you know. So yeah. You sell something, you do errands, like I've done house sitting, I was like a shopkeeper, like you name it, like you had to do everything to hustle.
Did you feel like you were forced to do it, or you enjoyed it when you were doing it?
So I mean, the thing is, the alternative to it was like you do nothing and you get nothing, you know. So it was like you had to work for what you want from a young age. And especially like growing up with my grandparents, like they didn't have much and all of that, you know. So they did their best, but they were old, and you know, that was the situation. So it was like, if I want to get something, I just need to go out and get it, you know. And from that young age, like I adopted this mindset that you know, through my work I get the reward and I get to enjoy it even more, right? Like if someone gives you something, it's just going to be that free something that you've gotten. But if you've put in like 2 years of actually, you know, putting in the work to actually get this thing, it, when you look at that thing, it's going to be 2 years of your hard work. It's not just going to be something taken for granted, right? So you know, I kind of adopted that mindset of like enjoying that grind, you know.
Yeah. You know, I was once talking with a friend and we were talking about like the role of adversity in the life of like of young adults. We saw from our experiences that actually those who somehow managed to navigate their way on their own, their parents were kind of, you know, tough, or like, you know, they heard a lot of no's growing up, like, you know, they're not the spoiled child. And then there are the others who got a lot of help from their parents, for example, to go do masters abroad and they pay for them or something like that. And then it was like us coming from middle class that we did not really have that. So we had to do it our own, and how it gives you a lot of self independence in a way. But also we realize that it gives you also a sense that, I mean, and I'm just thinking out loud of you are not, you don't learn how to ask for help very well. And you don't ask for help when you need it. And I'm curious if you had kind of those experiences when you did not ask for help, because when you don't, sometimes people think that you're being like an arrogant and Mr. knows it all. Or have you have that?
100%. Yeah. Like the thing is, for many years, like I've been in this state where I'm like, I don't need anyone, I can do it all on my own, you know. And I've been somewhat trained to think that way. Like my grandparents always told me, like, you know, everything that you're learning now, that this the discipline, this regime that you're on, would make you into a person where you don't, you won't need anyone when you become an adult. But if you have someone in your life, it'll be because you want them in your life, you know. So that's just one aspect in terms of like a relationship. But then when it comes to actually like your career, you know, day-to-day living, casual relationships, all these things, you know, I've really struggled with like asking for help. Like even now, you know, it's one of the most difficult things for me to do, you know. But over the past couple of years, I've been getting better at it. And it's always like I still have this feeling of owing someone if I do ask for help, you know, which you shouldn't have, because I have so many good people in my life that are willing to help me with literally anything, you know. But I still have this this feeling, and I guess it's a bit of conditioning there, you know, that internal dialogue that goes along with it. And I mean, hopefully I can get over that one day, you know, like sometime soon maybe, because I still do think that way sometimes, you know.
Yeah. So maybe for anyone that is listening right now, what would be from the first section, what would be like some guiding questions that you think, let's say top three, that they should ask themselves in order to know the direction? What would you think?
So in terms of, I mean, okay, so going outside of the book, just what comes to mind now in terms of the direction, I mean, you said before, right? You do struggle with like knowing exactly what you want, because I mean, who you are is something that's changing. It's something that's dynamic. You as a concept is not something static, right? Like we change every single day. So I think ultimately what I would say is, how do you want to feel and do exactly the things that give you this feeling, you know? Not to a point of an extreme point, whereas you go down this path of like just pleasure and then you ignore all responsibilities that comes with adulthood, you know. But I think instead of three questions, you can just have one. Like, how do you want to feel? And are you doing the things that want, that you want to, that makes you want to feel this way, or makes you feel this way? Sorry. Because, you know, like I address this as well. Like, we always go for the things that everyone pushes onto us. You know, you should study this. Your parents will tell you, you should study this because this is a lucrative career, or, you know, your teacher, your peers, whoever, like, they all want to have that influence onto you. And I mean, it all comes from a good place, right? They all think that this would be the best route for you. But ultimately, you would know, because, and how do you know? It's by how you feel. So if you know that going down this path doesn't feel right, you don't feel good, you're not enthusiastic about it, then, you know, it's something you maybe shouldn't be doing. And it is exactly what you just said, you know, like knowing mm-hmm. what you don't want. And mm-hmm. by knowing what you don't want, you kind of eliminate all those things, and it kind of further narrows down the possibilities of things that you do want, because, you know, it's like a process of elimination. It's like you try a bunch of stuff and then you get to know what you actually like. You know, it's like, how do you, what's your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Pistachio.
Okay, how do you know it's pistachio? Have you tried all the others?
Actually, I used to hate it when I was young, so yeah, so I eliminated pistachio. And it was my dad's favorite. I don't know why. I was wondering why he liked pistachio. And then, like, yeah, I tried different ones. I always try to try, like, a new thing, even in restaurants. Like, I get the weird mm-hmm. name that I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, like, when I tried pistachio, I was like, oh, this is so good. And it became my favorite.
So there you have it. Yeah, so exactly, right? So there was, like, a process of elimination. And, like, you know, most people, they would... like young people especially, they would go down a career path and then they would stick to it, you know. And there's different cognitive biases, and one I really like is a sunk cost fallacy, which is like, basically, if you invest a certain amount of time or resources into something, the possibility of you leaving that behind and moving on,
can you repeat that really again low.
So it's called sunk cost fallacy, S-U-N-K.
Ah, yeah, sunk cost policy. Yeah. this is like in economics. Yeah,
something like that. It's cognitive biases, right? So we have a bunch of these, and if we understand these, we can, you know, somehow overcome them, right? Because it's like natural for us to, let's say, I purchase a movie ticket for like this super hyped up movie that's gonna come out, and I waited for months. The movie is finally out. I'm there in the movie theater, and it's 30 minutes in, and I already waited months. I spent this money. I booked my seat. And then the movie is absolute crap. Am I going to leave and save another 2 hours of my life? Or am I going to sit there because I spent this money in the past, because I waited so long? You know, so it's the same thing. And we do this for everything. Like, if I'll give you a good example, like where I'm from, like a lot of people have studied engineering, right? Because the oil and gas economy on the island, it was booming at one point in time. Everyone thought they would make a lot of money with this career, but now it's going downhill. A lot of people with engineering degrees, and they're just there hoping to get a job in engineering instead of you know, rethinking their career choice, you know, trying to learn new skills, change their career direction, which would you know, almost guarantee them getting a job in some other field. But because of this investment in the past, they're still holding on to this, right? And even years may go by, and like this is a huge problem that a lot of people face from what I see.
You mentioned something that I found very interesting. You talked about how do you want to feel, but at the same time you say that, like, not diving too much into pleasure and not thinking about long term, and you mentioned long term in your book. And this is where I want to ask you, because if I am, especially, like, imagine myself, like, my sister is 18 or 19 or 20, how I want to feel, even like now, like, I'm 27 and sometimes I feel like I want to do different stuff, you know? And then how I want to feel is, like, super dynamic, especially when you are at a younger age. And how can I balance, you know, long-term, while doing how I want to feel, especially if I imagine myself finished high school and I'm choosing what I want to study, for example. And I'm like, oh, I feel like, you know, I have the artistic vibe, so maybe I should study arts, but at the same time I like business, so maybe I should study business. So How what is the best way to navigate that? Though there is no right or wrong answer, depends on the people's journey. But what do you think?
Exactly. So that's the thing, right? Like, I don't have the answer. So what I can do is just tell you my perception or my thought process for something like this. The way I approach it is like, okay, so right now, everything that I enjoy, it's because of the life decisions that I made 10 years ago, right? So basically, as a 17-year-old, 18-year-old, like, those choices, you know, is what compounded. So basically, you said you don't know if to study arts or if to study business, as a simple example, right? Now, the way I see it is like, it's a productive approach in terms of studying art or business. Either way, if you compound on that, if you work on that for 10 years, I'm pretty sure you're going to be at a place in life 10 years from now where you can take care of yourself. You would be enjoying, hopefully, what you do because it's what you chose. It all comes down to your level of responsibility as well. Like, are you just throwing away money? Are you just chasing down just pleasure? But in this case, it's something practical. It's something that's going to help you, something that's going to actually put food on the table. To be practical. And, you know, for something like those two choices, I would say either way, it would turn out fine, you know, compared to like someone saying, I want to just quit everything and just go live on an island and just party. Like, you know, where do you suppose that would take you 10 years from now? So it doesn't really matter, in my opinion, like what you do with your career. It's as long as you're happy doing it. I don't want to be too hippie saying this kind of stuff, but you know, but there's that compound effect, right? Like, if you work at something, doesn't matter what it is, like, I'm pretty sure after 10 years, you're going to get results. Like, there's no way around that. Like, you would master something in the span of 10 years.
Yeah. And in the book, there is like a whole section about purpose and career. And you say it like, follow your purpose and you'll find your profession. For young adults, maybe it's a bit overwhelming to know one's purpose. And the definition of that changes along the way.
I agree.
Do you see purpose and profession interconnected, or do you see you can have one purpose and different professions kind of iterating yourself?
So, yeah, I mean, definitely. But the way I see it is that if you can get your purpose to align with your profession, then, you know, it makes life so much easier, right? Like, it just becomes the same thing. But I mean, of course, like, for me, for example, like, I've changed my purpose so many times because I've just felt like calling for one thing and then another thing, you know, like, I've been deep into health and
fitness. Tell me more,
I'm like, yeah, I've been like a certified nutrition coach. I've been personal trainer. I've been an athlete, and I've had these moments, these years where I really just wanted to push this, you know. And like, growing up with my grandparents as well, like, seeing them sick and suffering and all this stuff, like, I had this point in my life where I was like, wow, I just don't want to see anyone sick. I just want to eliminate any type of lifestyle diseases and, you know, make sure no one has to suffer, because it's horrible. And then I can take everything I know and you know, I just made that my purpose for some time. But then, you know, I actually went into it and I deep dive into it, became a coach, became a personal trainer, all this stuff. And then I was like, okay, maybe I want to change things up a bit, you know. But I mean, the passion is still there. I still want to have this impact, and I can still do it, but it probably isn't aligned to my profession, you know, because I have other responsibilities. Maybe this doesn't pay well enough. So I still have other passions, things that I want to do, things that I want to try, other changes that I want to bring about, you know. And a lot of people have these things, you know. You'll see it a lot, like, especially when I was younger, I see a lot of young people now as well. They want to go volunteer, do these kind of things, and it's all good. But in terms of long term, you know, like, with volunteering, you know, your time and your hours, is it scalable? And would this bring about the most impact? Or can you, doing your own project, starting your own thing, bring about more impact, you know? And it usually is the latter. So, I mean, I also said, you know, like, if you can't find your purpose and all that, you create one, you make something up, like, it doesn't matter. Like, no one is there. no one that I think about is there at the end of life. with a, you know, just sitting there and just waiting for you, like, ah, let me see, what was the purpose of your life, what did you choose, you know, like, yeah. You can do anything you want eventually. Yeah. It's your life, it's your choices, you know. And one of the main things I probably didn't put into the book, or I'm not sure if I did, is that, you know, don't take anyone's advice, like, no one, zero, not even your own. Sometimes you can't even trust yourself sometimes, because, you know, everything you have in here is limited. Everyone who shares with you, they have limited thinking as well. No one knows everything. No one knows what's the best, but they all think they do to an extent. And, you know, it's whatever they perceive and share with you, you know. So I would say just take everything with a grain of salt and see what works for you ultimately, because, you know, you are the person who has to experience your life.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I wonder if, because we need to also be smart, you know, on how we don't have all the time of the world, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I wonder to which, I even ask myself, okay, to which extent I can give myself the permission to experiment different things. Because there were times in my life where I felt I was doing a lot of things at the same time, because I had this thirst to know if that's, I even did better stuff for a while.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
to check me, because I love coffee, making coffee, and I was like, I don't know if marketing is a thing, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You get into that loop, and then you find, like, okay, your energy is so much scattered all over the place, and that is also draining, you know. So sometimes it brings opposite of it, of you just stop everything. And it's like trying different things. I was like trying different things and seeing what sticks, you know, what stays there. But yeah, it's good. I think not taking everyone's advice, but sometimes it's good to, it optimizes efforts, you know? So
do you have
like an age cap for you on how you perceive things of, okay, this is where I can allow myself to experiment as much as I can. After that, I need to put my, literally shit together. Yeah. How did you go with this?
So, I mean, from me, I think personally that this whole age gap thing, it's like, you know, something that society kind of pushes onto you. And it's like, when you reach this age, you're supposed to have this and this and this. Like, I think that's a bunch of bullshit, you know, like, do whatever the fuck you want to do, you know, it's your life. But at the same time, you know, have some personal responsibility, basically have your shit together. So I would say, okay, in terms of a young adult, I would say anyone who just finishes high school to me is like a young adult. Anyone who turns 18 is basically a young adult, right? Yeah. Because from the time you turn 18, everything changes for you from a legal standpoint, and then from a perception standpoint, from how society sees you. It's like, okay, you're 18 now, you have this kind of, how should I say it, responsibility to own up at a certain level, right? And I think you shouldn't be stuck in a childhood phase, as in, oh, I just want to party, I just want to hang out, like, you know, like, at least get to a point of where you're independent, can support yourself, can take care of things, can have a level of responsibility, can be accountable.
Yeah.
And I think from there, like, the age gap thing, having requirements to fill at 30 or 40 or 50, like, all this is bullshit. You know, like, even for me, like, everyone says, it's just given that someone retires at, let's say, 60. Like, I don't see the point of that. Like, if you enjoy what you do, why do you have to retire from it? You know, like, let's say, for example, like, I'm hoping to still be writing books at 60. Like, why would I stop at 60? There's like, did I run out of value that I need to offer? Can I not offer anything more to society after 60? You know, so, you know, having these limitations from society put onto you, I think that should completely be ignored. And
But to, like, critically, because I did have these conversations with friends, and critically, some people would argue, no, like, you should be realistic as well in certain timings. For example, when to be a parent, you don't want to, like, be a parent when you are 50 years old, for example, because you don't want that age gap with you and your kid, for example. Like, you have to be responsible, or you don't want to go, do whatever you want at a certain age, and then you have to sustain yourself. So what you're saying is that, and I think it's very important to emphasize on this, is the personal responsibility you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think people, when they hear sometimes such discourse, they think that it's a calling to explore, do whatever, but no, like it's you talked about money and money management in the book. You talked about like different habits, about even nutrition. So it's about being responsible, accountable, paying your bills, being smart in a way. I think that's the optimization of things, and at the same time exploring other things and keep on being curious about yourself. But what do you 100%. Say to those who are telling you have to be realistic in certain things? The example that I gave you.
So that's a really good example, right? Like, okay, if you know you want to be a parent at 30, let's say you have a partner or you're married and you want to have kids at 30, or let's say 35, and you know for certain that this is what you want, then obviously you work towards that. But if you know you're at this stage where you're not sure if you even want to get married, or some people, they want to travel, some people, they want to settle down. So it all depends. So that it comes back to the first thing, right? Direction. Like, you need to know where you're going or have an idea so you can work backwards and fulfill the requirements to get to that point, right? So let's say you're a 20-year-old and you want to have a kid at 30. So you need to ask yourself, am I doing the things right now that I need to do to be a parent at 30? So it's like fulfilling the requirements for getting there. Simple as that, you know? And if you say another person, another 20-year-old who wants to travel the world, then it doesn't become easier, because it's still a huge financial obligation that you need to fulfill. But obviously the requirements are different. You're not bringing another human into the world. You don't need so much stability and all of that. But so that's what it comes down to. It's like, if you know what you want to get to, then it becomes easier as doing the steps to get there, right?
I agree. I want to talk more about money in the, like, to deep like dive deeper in money. And the reason why, because I feel in a lot of societies, at least mine, and I know like in the MEA region and actually even globally, there's always a stigma about talking about money. And in a way, that stigma makes the 1% rich and the rest like
exactly.
And with the internet, so grateful that we have this access to information, and you realize just money is just energy and just comes and goes, and it's, you just have to be smart and invest smart and talk about it openly. So and this is something like I had to figure out on my own, like through books and through webinars, etc. I really, in the book, love, you talked about managing money. You even like had a list of like, when you buy something, is it practical, is it not? You talked about, smart debt and dumb debt. So maybe if you can
elaborate,
have like kind of what can someone expect in the book when reading about money, especially for young adults? I think it's very valuable.
Yeah. So I think from the beginning, so that's a really good point that you made, because even in my society, like, it's taboo to talk about money. No one discusses it, right? And I mean, ultimately, why do we spend 20 years in school and get a job? It's like, we need money to survive, right? Like, that's why people choose lucrative careers. That's why a lot of people become like doctors, lawyers, engineers, whatever, because they know it's high earning careers, right? So
yeah,
we talk about the careers, but we don't talk about the money. And we do all of this, getting qualifications and whatnot, in order to put ourselves at a place where we can get money. Now, ultimately, money is just a medium of exchange, right? Like, I want your pen that you're selling, and I give you money for it, and then you give me the pen. Simple as that, right? So, but there are other ways you can do this without money, but I'll get to that later on, in terms of like finding a way to provide value. And let's say I give you 1 hour of consulting and you give me the pen, you know, it may be worth more than a pen, but you get it, right? And so the thing is, ultimately, money is a medium of exchange. Now, it's easy to get into debt when you're a young person, because that you're just, let's say, a teenager, and they're going to give you this huge sum of money so you can get a degree. But if you're the same teenager who has this idea for like a business, and you go to the bank asking for a loan, there's almost a zero chance that they're going to give this to you, And I had this experience myself when I was younger. I had this business proposal, and I would never get a loan for it, but yet still they would give me money to get a degree somehow, but it's crazy. Now, yeah, like the whole idea of managing money is from my experience and how it has worked for me is like, mm-hmm. I always look at every purchase as an investment. Now, of course, there's a million flashy things and nice things that you want to have and things that you want to experience. But at the same time, you need to, you know, have that level of personal responsibility and develop that level of discipline. And now you mentioned I called it smart debt and dumb debt, right? And
yes.
Basically, now what I said is that smart debt is anything that you spend money on that actually brings value to you, you know, rather than lose value. In terms of dumb debt, I would call it like, let's say you need a new car and you go to the firm, you purchase a brand new vehicle, whereas you can have spent like one third of that money, purchase a used vehicle and it fulfills the same requirements. But why did you need the new one? And the moment you drive out of the firm with it, it loses value, depreciates in value. Every year, the value goes down. You can never get back that money, you know? So if you, let's say you actually purchased a used vehicle, you spend one third of the money. I mean, I'm talking from experience as well, because this is something I did, right? And you take that money, you invest it into something, let's say Bitcoin. And from there, you just leave it. And after 3 years, the person who buys the brand new car, they're going to be at one third their value. And the person who purchased the used car, they're still going to have their used car. And then they're going to have this asset that goes up in value, you know? So it's just being a little more practical and smart with your money and thinking long-term instead of in the moment only.
Yeah. You talked about, like, you gave this rule, like about the money management, about having, you even like put how the income should be. So you talked about 10% mm-hmm. of income is to make you financially free, and then mm-hmm. give 5% of income for contributing and giving back. What do you mean by that? Contributing and giving back the 5% of income. Okay, and why?
So just to give context, like you don't have to follow this system, but this is just an example of a system, right? You can split it up. Now, I would always say to contribute and give back from my perspective, because, okay, let's say I earn all this bunch of money and I just only take care of myself. Like, you know, it just feels good to give. Like there is, and I'm pretty sure you can at least find one person who needs, even if it's just like $20 more than you. Like at one point in time, I'm pretty sure there's some guy in the street that's going to be like, hey, can you just buy me a lunch? You know, like something as simple as that. And think about it from this perspective. It doesn't matter that you bought him the lunch and stuff. It comes down to how you feel. And if you bought someone a lunch and that person is like so grateful to you for just buying this lunch, you're going to walk away feeling a million times better. Even if you're having a shitty day and this guy asks you to get him that lunch and you get him this lunch and then he just says, thank you. You know, this is the first meal I've had in 2 days. Like you're going to walk away with that feeling of like, wow, you know, I actually contributed to someone, because ultimately, inherently, we want to help each other, you know, and then our ego gets in the way, like our greed gets in the way, all of this kind of stuff. But ultimately, like almost everything that a moral person with a certain level of consciousness wants to do is help each other, you know.
Yeah.
And if you're making money, like why not do it financially? Because you may not be able to with your time or volunteering or whatnot. So if you have that extra income and you have that extra money, then you can do it in this way.
And I might add to that is also detachment in a way. So like you are detached from you know, because sometimes you know you don't want to end up, you know, that person super excited when the super attached to, you know, his paycheck. Mm-hmm. And exactly. I think it does teach you a detachment, and like it's kind of a spiritual thing, because in some religions does mm-hmm. exist, like the fact to give a percentage of your
Exactly.
So that's the give part, and then you said play 10% is for joy and having fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, of course, like, you know, you work so hard, you do everything. You don't want to be this person who's like, oh, I need to invest, I need to save, I need to do this, I need mm-hmm. to buy this, I need to take care of the bills. But then what is the point? You know, like your life is going by and you still need to enjoy. And, you know, like it needs to be a complete thing. It needs to be a balanced thing. And of course, that is extremely difficult, because, you know, it's easy to become so entrenched or so deep into one thing that you kind of forget about the others, you know, but it's always just taking that time to zoom out, to step back and look at your life from a complete perspective, you know, rather than just like, oh, I need to be on this and then that's it.
Yeah.
So you need to take that time to play, because I mean, some people, they take it to the extreme, but then others, it's either way, right? Some people, they just work. And then some people, all they do is just party and, you know, that's it. And then you need to have the balance. Like, what is the point of working and doing all this stuff and saving and investing and you don't enjoy it, right? Like,
that's true. That's what my mom says. Yeah. And you talked about education as well. 10% of income. Of course, like, just a disclaimer, this is your perspective, your book, it's not financial advice or whatever.
Zero.
Yeah, of course. And then necessities, 55% of income. I think there are like also other models that people also can check in the like online
there's a lot of them.
But it's good to have that understanding from a young age. I would say that's the optimization, because for example, for me, I was not good at money management. And then it's like through education, seeing how other people do, friends who started sharing with me, like being open about talking, that I learned.
Yeah. And this is the thing, right? Like, we're not taught this in school. We go to school for 20 years and no one taught us how to manage our money. Like, isn't that crazy? Like, not once was I thought, I need to, this is how you invest your money. You turn 18, you start working, you just put 5% and then 40 years from now, it's going to turn into this. Like, how could they not teach this stuff, you know? And this is what annoys me. Like, this is what got me to write the book, right? Like, this is the stuff that you need to know.
Yeah, that's true. And even like in terms of like, when they teach us, I would say like, it's about just saving, and, you know, saving enough is not enough. You know, you have to learn how to, and that's not even our
like
culture.
Saving is like one of the worst pieces of advice, in my opinion, because of inflation. And no one teaches about inflation unless if you do an economics class or something, right? Like, because let's say the bank gives you like 1 or 2%, and then inflation is 2 to 3%, then, which means by saving, you're losing money, you have less money, your purchasing power is actually less, you know? And this is like insane that no one teaches this.
That's true. I advise people to check the book that I loved so much. And I even liked like how you gave some questions when you buy something. And I think like this is like something that it does optimize, because we buy a lot what we don't need. And then when you try to have this kind of questionnaire, it really works.
It does.
Like, I would ask myself, okay, do I really need that? You know, like, or postpone sometimes when you buy. Like, I will postpone it for like 3 days if I want to buy something, depending on how much is it. And then if I feel like it's fine that I don't need it, then I don't buy it.
Because to me, like, you know, okay, everything, it starts with awareness, right? So all of these models of thinking and everything, it's just the start of you having that awareness. And, you know, once you get interested in something, once you start seeing some progress, it's like a person who starts at the gym and then 1 week goes by and, you know, they feel a little stronger, you know, like they see a little muscle come out or a little fat goes down, their clothes fit a little better. And then immediately with that little bit of improvement there, then, you know, they get hooked. They're like, oh, I want to keep going, you know? And then they eventually build a habit, they improve, they get deeper knowledge because they get into it, they start seeing progress. So it's the same thing with anything applied throughout, you know? It's like, okay, you start thinking about your money this way. And the moment you start seeing a change, like, I have an extra $500 this month. Wow, where did this come from? And then from there, you know, you want to actually go deep into it. You want to understand it better. You want to learn to invest your money. You want to have more. Like, it's natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And self-awareness is a journey. So fuck-ups are very good as well.
it's the best thing, in my opinion. Like, you need to, right? Like, then you get the hard lessons and then you can teach it to someone else as well.
Yeah. You know, I think what's important, because for me, like, when I had like that, I would say identity crisis, or, you know, like that's rock bottom, that what people call. When you have it the first time, but I think it depends on what you have been consuming in terms of like content or books or people, that really defines a lot how you will wake up from that rock bottom. because everyone will have that rock bottom at a certain point of their lives, but how you will wake up and how much that rock bottom will take, like whatever you read now might not like say, okay, like this sounds good, etc. But you will realize how much that is important because you keep on, you know, storing it at the back of your mind. And the day, the day when you face a shit hole in your life and you'll be like, okay, I read about this once or I heard about this once. So I know it will end. So I think that's very important that young people do navigate this kind of content.
Yeah. And it's just like having that exposure to it, right? So when something does happen, when shit does hit the fan, you have this level of awareness and you're not at a point where, okay, I see two things that are really common amongst young people. I mean, people in general, any adult, right? It's like that victim mindset and I would say scarcity mindset. And just to touch on both, it's like that victim mindset is like, oh, why does this always happen to me? It just becomes about you. And the reality is like, there's 7+ billion people in the world and thinking that, you know, this is happening to you only, you know, that's a bit selfish in my opinion. So once you can get over that, I mean, it's easier said than done, but you know, when you apply logic and you think rationally, it's like, wow, yeah, I'm really not the only person this is happening to, you know, there's like millions of people. And then you can go down the rabbit hole of like, ah, there's millions of people who haven't had a decent meal in like days or months or years, maybe they don't have experiencing drought or endless war, like, you know, you can go deeper into it. But ultimately, that victim mindset, if you can get to a point where even if you don't get over it, you get to a point where you're like, yes, I am in victim mindset at the moment. So it helps you overcome that a little bit better, you know?
I think we all been like guilty of that, like the scarcity. I've also fell into that scarcity trap at one point in my life and like the victim mindset. So but it's good that you observe that at least in you and surround yourself with people that observe that. And you talked about that about in the relationship chapter when you say choose your friends, choose your people.
You know, ultimately, like that is one of the, in my opinion, one of the things that would make or break your life. But honestly, like I think the people that you surround yourself are literally who you're going to be. You know, it's I know it's said and it's repeated, but honestly, like from life experience, like I'm really going to push this point because I'll give you an example, you know, like a lot of people I grew up around, like, you know, now some of them are in jail, some of them got shot, they're selling drugs, you know, involved in criminal activity. Like I wouldn't want to associate myself with these people because I mean, although we shared a period of life together and we somewhat grew up together and all this stuff, like this is who they are. This is their path. And the moment I get involved in that, it's obvious that, you know, I'm going to integrate with that type of energy, that type of motive, you know? So now what I have to do is seek out like-minded people, people that are actually into growth, people that want to do better, people that actually want to contribute. Like that is the people that I want to be around. And it comes down to you, like, who do you want to be? And find these people who are like that. And then, you know, there's a chance, a huge chance that you're going to be like this, you know?
Yeah.
It's really simple. And I mean, a lot of people, they struggle with getting out of the environment. And like, even for me, that's like why I had to leave home. You know I was like a bit stuck here and surrounded by this type of negativity, I would say, or energy. And I knew I had to leave. And sometimes you just need to make that choice. And that's the thing about becoming an adult as well, right? Like you get to a point where there's autonomy and you can move. So you should move.
Yeah. And I think also the fact like to choose and okay, I made the choice and that's it. I'm going in that choice because it's easy to fall in the trap of the what ifs. So like at least what I try to do to myself is that I turn those what ifs into the good what ifs. So what if this works out? Exactly. What if this this turns out better? But you know, but I think, you know, hard conversations, doing them and like just assuming your choice. That's where we go. You know, you do something, you assume your choice.
Exactly. And it's just a matter of ownership, right? And that comes with maturity. Like part of maturity is ownership. You need to take ownership of your decision. It's your decision, it's your life, and these are the consequences. You need to face the music, like at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the way I see it, it's like I have a somewhat I would say rational, optimistic view of life, but I think things always work out the way it should work out, you know, like somehow it just does. And I'll give you an example. Like when I left my job, I had like 2 months of savings. I was in Asia. Everywhere was in lockdown. I couldn't get into my own country. And somehow 1 year later, I finished a book and things worked out fine. Like at the moment, it was like a shitstorm. It was crazy. I didn't have a home. And like, I was flying from country to country and all this kind of stuff. But somehow it did work out. And, you know, when I look back at it, I have this epic story to tell. And then, you know, like, it works out at the end. Like it somehow out. It always does.
Yeah. Coming to the end of this beautiful conversation, did not really feel the time. I want to know, who are your inspirations in life? Like when you are in rock bottom, what do you do to get yourself out of that rabbit hole?
Yeah,
if you can like go through like practical things, like what do you do?
I mean, I haven't had such a low moment in maybe like 6 years or so. But, you know, if I can reflect and think back to...
Even a bad day, it doesn't have to be a very, very rock bottom.
Yeah. Even the concept of a bad day, you know. But yeah, let me just think. You know, I use logic, you know. But I would think, okay, I would use logic and think, you know, like, am I just playing victim? You know, someone has it worse, all this kind of stuff. But ultimately, I think that the easiest life hack, in my opinion, is to call a friend. Call a friend. Let them remind you who you are, you know, what life is about. Like, you need to have, you know, one or two people in your life that you can just call up. Because ultimately, you're a human being. You're flawed. You have emotions. Like, no matter what you do, you're not a robot, you know? So, yeah, find someone that you need to call. That's the ultimate life hack when you have a low moment. And you need to have those people in your life that you can just call up. Listen, I'm not in a good place. This is what I'm facing right now. I just need you to listen, hear me out. And sometimes that's all you need, you know? And just one sentence from the right person can help you make strides in getting out of that hole. You know?
Yeah, that's true. And not give it the importance that we tend to give it to for it sometimes. Last question is, I always ask for the different guests, is what is the one thing that you want to challenge people's perspective about or on?
One thing. Are you doing the things that you want to do or what others want you to do? Simple as that. Like everything that you do, question it. You know, was this told to me? Am I doing this to impress someone? Am I doing this to look good? Am I doing this to, you know, status signal? Or is it something that genuinely makes me happy? You know, am I really doing this for me? And I think the more times you can answer for me, the easier life becomes. You know, it's more enjoyable, I would say. Yeah.
These things, like, they sound super sometimes, like, you know, the type of things that are easier said than done, and they are easier said than done.
They are 100%.
But they are true. Yeah. You know, like when you experience them, they are freaking true.
And that's the thing. That's why I put down the questions, because it's something like what I used to do when I was younger. I would print stuff out on my wall. Like if I have like this mental thought, like let's say the way I approach a problem, you know, think about it logically, then think about it like begin with the rational perspective and then think about, okay, practical steps, right? And that's how I navigate a problem rather than just sitting and thinking like, yeah, I know if I do this, but do you actually do it? You know, so
yeah,
I mean, it all comes down to action. Like you have to do it. You have to do the thing to get the thing done. Like that's the only way, because there's a million books about, you know, how to get your shit together, I'm guessing. Like, you know, there's a million books on finance, a million books on relationships, all this stuff. But ultimately, it comes down to practicality. You actually need to get your hands dirty and start applying this stuff.
That's true. Simple. That's true.
Yeah.
So everyone who's listening, really, the book is super, super practical. I think it's good because the practicality, what I like about it is like, sometimes even when we talk to a friend about like we're going through hard moments, it happened to me, like, we tend to be sometimes philosophical about things, and that sometimes it's good in an academia perspective, but sometimes it doesn't get you anywhere. Like you need to, you know, be practical. Okay, what do I need to do right now? You know, to, because action, I feel like action is what drives, I don't know, motivation, like to wait to be motivated to do something, or to it will never happen, never ever.
And
that's something like I learned throughout the way. So the book will definitely give you like the questions, guided questions, to navigate different aspects, from relationships to wisdom to money management, to know what you want. Thank you very much, Neil. That was an interesting conversation.
Thank you for having me. And I'll just say, anyone who wants to get the book, you can find it on Amazon. It's Get Your Shit Together. Or you can just go to the website, gistbook.com. So gistbook.com.
All right. And when they can find you?
Instagram is fine, or you can email me neil@neilateem.com, or on Instagram at neilateem, neilateem, or Twitter as well.
But don't worry, guys, because I will put that also in the description in the episode.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Neil, and have a nice day.
Thank you for having me, Inez. Thank you.